Black Trade Union. We meet the second Tuesday of every month at 6 p.m. And since the coronavirus here, we have suspended face-to-face meetings, so we're utilizing Google Meet to conduct our meetings. So our next meeting will be held March the 9th, 2021 at 6 p.m. And our email address is orcbtu10@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you, so join us in our ever-evolving adventure of representing Black union workers.
Yes. Well, again, Sister Berkeley, I want to thank you for stopping, you know, putting a pause on your life in order to join us tonight for our recognition of not only Women's Day, but also Black History Month.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. It was wonderful to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. What a blessing, Tina and Audrey. I'm doing my little virtual hug. What a blessing, my sister.
Thank you. Thank you.
Received and sent back.
Yes.
This is wonderful. Oh my God.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Hi everyone, I'm Henry, and I'd like to invite you to listen to Fortress on a Hill on KBOO Portland. My co-hosts and I are three leftist veterans that aim to expose the reality of the U.S. military's multiple wars abroad and illuminate the damage military service does to Americans and foreign citizens around the world. How can we stand by and do nothing while our military kills and destroys the lives the world over, while telling Americans that all this death and destruction protects them from terrorists, when nothing could be more false? Fortress on a Hill aims to change that. You can listen to us at 9 a.m. on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month right here on KBOO. And thanks.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
The policeman said to me, son, they won't build no schools anymore. All they build will be prison, prison. They won't build no schools anymore. All they build will be prison, prison. They won't build no schools anymore. All they build will be prison, prison. Cause today, yeah, I am a prisoner. I am a prisoner. I'm a prisoner.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. Today, we're here with Dr. Karma Corcoran. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm excited to have you on the show. You're welcome. Tell us all about yourself and all these great things that you're doing and working on.
Well, thank you so much. Adam, if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and introduce myself in the traditional way. My name is Karma Corcoran. I am a member of the Chippewa Cree Nation. Chief Big Bear is my great-great-grandfather. Chief Little Bear is my great-grandfather. And Open Eyes Little Bear is my grandmother. And I just, you know, really got started in working on the issue of incarceration because of my own family experience. You know, incarceration runs deeply through our culture and through our generations. And my family, like, you know, the majority of Native families, has been highly affected. So I have many brothers that have been in, and that, you know, includes places like county jails, tribal jails, state penitentiaries, federal penitentiaries. and I am one of many people in my family. So I probably have close to or more than 50 nieces and nephews. And the majority of my nieces and nephews, and that includes my great nieces and nephews, have been in. And now, you know, their children are cycling through the system from the juvenile justice system on up. So a few years ago, it's been quite a few now, I was over at a conference on the Umatilla Reservation, and the speaker, you know, at lunchtime, they kind of open it up if anybody's got an announcement or, you know, something of interest. So a woman stood up and was talking about that she goes into Coffee Creek, the women's prison, and, you know, is looking for some volunteers. And I always share that no spirit ever told me to put my hand down. So I raised my hand, you know, and then she says, along with other people, she says, who can pass a background check? So quite a few hands went down. And so she said, you know, come and talk to me if you're interested. So I made my way over and told her that I was interested in talking to her about it. And, you know, I managed volunteers for years. In fact, I have a consulting business and I direct like 500 volunteers generally for a March event. And so I'm used to volunteers and people who say they're going to give their time and then, you know, you never see them. But I did show back up around, and I was fortunate to start going into the women's prison, just being a support person during talking circle or the sweat, helping with the First Foods Festival. So the concentration was really on Native American women. And for me, I really realized that that was something I needed to really think about, because I wasn't home in Montana. I wasn't going to move home to Montana. And it was a way of serving my own people and my own family and our tribes by, you know, being a volunteer. And I really just enjoyed the process of being there and meeting the women, providing them some sort of connection, you know, eating lunch with them, praying with them. And then when it came time for me to drill down to what my dissertation was going to be about, you know, you go into a PhD and you have this idea and it's like as big as the world. And then, you know, they work with you and your advisor, and because you have to drill it down or, you know, you'd never finish. And so I really felt like what I wanted to concentrate on was, in my case, Native American women and the need for healing and the fact that people that are incarcerated, no matter who they are invisible. We don't think about them. And for example, you know, Coffee Creek, the women's prison, which is just south of us here in Portland, you know, if you drive by there on I-5, you may not even know it's a prison. And these complexes are built to not draw attention to them because they don't want the general public to be afraid. It's also that concept of hiding them away. And if they're hidden away, then we don't think about them. We're able to not be concerned about them as human beings. So during my PhD work, I was fortunate to have this professor named F. David Peet, who has since passed on. He's a theoretical physicist, and he did a lot of work with the Blackfeet people of Montana and wrote a book called Blackfeet Physics. He also did a lot of work with the First Nations people. And this theory is called gentle action theory. And it's a theory that is designed to address a societal ill. And it can be applied to any societal ill, you know, homelessness, drug addiction, even small neighborhood, you know, squabbles. For me, you know, I chose the issue of incarceration, Native women, their need for healing. And I researched it a lot. I looked at traditional ways for Native people of addressing a societal issue in their community. And it was just such a good match. Not only, I feel like, for traditional ways, but even my way of being in the world. You know, when I was a younger woman, let's just say I was a little on the strident side, okay? Not very temperate. Fortunately, I've learned some of those things as I've gotten older, and I find that by being less strident and more temperate, I'm able to have more communication with people that is reciprocal. General action theory is one that's built on trust and respect, relationship, which for the Native way of being, you know, that's where we come from traditionally. So I've been using the theory, the work and research I've done, my own personal experiences about incarceration to really help people to think about those that are inside in a different way. So for example, you know, if I'm speaking in person, I may put up a PowerPoint with this group of Native young men, handsome lads, if I do say so. Their arms are crossed, they're, you know, standing in a circle. And I ask people, what does a felon look like to you? And so they may describe, you know, this dark figure in a hoodie and, you know, da da da. And I put that up there and I say, this is what a felon looks like to me. These are my nephews. And, you know, this one here, he's just like his daddy. You know, he's a rascal. And this one here, he's the quiet one. But to bring humanity to that concept of someone who's inside, they're more than a felon, they're more than a criminal. They're my brother, they could be your brother, they could be your nephew, my nephew. And, you know, certainly with the women, the fact that these are women that predominantly are mothers, that are away from their children, many locked up, you know, during their childbearing years. Many have come up through the system from juvenile justice on, have spent most of their life incarcerated. So what can we do? And for me, the first thing is to notice them in a deeper way than when you turn on the news every night and they always start with the scary news stories. You know, one time I went to a seminar on, you know, getting your piece on the news, and some great news people here in Portland, and they said, you know, news is always going to start out with crime or some sort of disaster. And if we can't find one in our local area, we'll go, you know, across the state or across the country internationally. And that's how they deliberately start the news. And I think that's how people deliberately start conversations about people that are incarcerated or who've been in. You'll notice, like, former felon, you know, when there's a story, even if the person hasn't done something wrong again, it'll be like, yeah, we talked to Jeremy, the former felon. And it's just like, he doesn't have that tattooed on his ass, I'm telling you. And so raising that awareness and then thinking, what can we do? We have to interrupt this. And we have to start thinking of people as human beings with needs. And people that lives can change because of personal intervention, of time, whether you're a volunteer, supporting groups that go in, supporting those that work with people that have come out of prison, and really helping that concept of that people can return to community. And here's the other thing, not every felon is a child molester or a killer. And that, you know, honestly, sometimes I think that if my life had not been changed at a younger age, I could have easily been a felon, whether it would be, you know, stealing food to take care of my many children. I did only have one. I'm like one of, we don't even know how many children, 12, 14, 16, we don't know. There's a lot of us. I could have possibly been a felon because I drove the getaway car involved in, you know, a robbery at 7-Eleven and somebody got hurt. I know that I made decisions early on about how I wanted my life to be, but it could have gone much differently. And I think when I, you know, converse with people online, which is, you know, just an interesting place, you hear a lot of like, well, they did the crime, now they have to do the time to lock them up, you know, just really binary, short-sighted attitudes about a person that's in, as opposed to what can we do as a society? What can we do? This is an issue that frankly has gotten a lot worse in the past 10 or 15 years here in Oregon because of Measure 11, which, you know, doesn't give a judge as much leeway to having an offender go into a program. You'll also find statistically that the bulk of women that are in because of crimes related to drugs and alcohol. So whether that's selling, intent to sell, being with their partner when something goes down, you know, the bulk of women are not in because they have committed, you know, murder. A lot of the women are in, you know, because of those things like really being involved in drugs. Also, you know, those things that come with that, unlawful use of somebody else's car, or definitely being repeat offenders. And under Measure 11, the platform for that is, you know, the first time you get this, the second time you get that, and on, as opposed to what's really going on in this person's life that they are either coming in again or they committed this crime in the first place.
Right. Like so, a lot of nonviolent crimes and things of that nature.
A lot of nonviolent crimes.
For folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. And we're here with Dr. Karma Corcoran. And, you know, you're merging life experience with on-the-ground community organizing and community outreach, which is also, well, in-reach and outreach, right? And then, mm-hmm. of course, there's the whole academic piece there and scholarship and helping to tie that gap, too, because there's a lot of deficit, right, in the the whole, I mean, the body of literature and people's understanding of these things, and you're able to do that university level. And I believe you're working on some very recent materials that speak to the things that you're talking about. So would love to hear more about that too, please.
Oh, absolutely. The first thing I really want to speak to is a wonderful program here in Oregon. We just have one women's prison in Oregon, Coffee Creek. And a few years ago, a law student was very involved on different issues of justice and had brought his girlfriend to meet me. And he said, you know, I've just become engaged. I'd really like you to meet my fiance. So he brought her over, and her name is Julia Yoshimoto. His name is Bhavan Singh. And she was looking for a placement, an externship, a fellowship. And we were able to access some dollars, in fact, $15,000 from Lewis and Clark Law School. And then she and I then had to raise the other $15,000, which we did. And so she did a year's fellowship with me in conjunction with the local nonprofit Red Lodge Transition Services that Representative Tana Sanchez is the co-founder of, and Trish Jordan. They're really the, you know, the ones that have been with this work, oh, I don't know, 30 years or something. Well, out of that fellowship, when Julia graduated law school, passed the bar, she wanted to do meaningful work and was able to access some dollars and the Oregon Justice Resource Center to start this project, which we now call the Women's Justice Project. So she goes into the prison and she works with the women who are maybe going to get out within the next year to 2 years about barriers they might have, you know, old fines, things that they might not even know about, so that when they get out, that they don't have as many legal barriers. She also, you know, helps them connect with their children, you know, things like that. So she knows ICWA and different things. Well, it's just grown into a wonderful program. I'm just so proud to say that we received an incredible amount of dollars from the Oregon legislature last year. We're up for dollars again this year. And to see this work go on is truly something I consider part of my life's legacy. And I sit on the advisory board. And so that's something where it started as grassroots, and now it's systematic, because you can't just be one place. And as you mentioned, the academic, I'm fortunate to direct the Indian Law Program at Lewis and Clark Law School. So we offer a great course in criminal justice in Indian country. I also am fortunate to be an adjunct professor at Portland State. And so we definitely discuss critical contemporary issues of our people. I also apply general action theory. And then, you know, very exciting is that I do have a book coming out in the fall of 2021 through the University of Nebraska Press. And the book is about, and you know how these things go, these titles, but it's based upon my dissertation. And so it's the juxtaposition of general action theory and traditional ways in bringing healing to Native American women that are incarcerated. What I'm excited about the book is two reasons. One, except for the book by Luana Ross, who is one of my mentors and my dearest friends, who wrote the first book ever about Native American women, incarceration, criminalization, with her work in the Montana State Prison, there's no other books out there about this. So I'm really excited. I'm excited too because my goal is certainly to be working with tribes, with organizations that serve Native Americans whose people are coming out of the system, coming back into community, to help them to approach this work in a different way. Because my argument is this, and this is true for Native people, and it's true for our society as a whole. If we were doing things well, we would not have this problem. We would not have so many people incarcerated. We would not have people that are going back in. We would not have people that are out, that can't find housing, can't find jobs, can't take care of themselves, because even though there's the box in Oregon on an employment application, people can still find out whether you're a felon or not. And so if we want to be a society that believes in second chances, believes in healing, believes in opportunity, we have got to do things better and in a different way than we're doing it now. And for myself, the message to the Native population is culture's always the answer. It's always going to be the answer. You know, access to our elders, access to community members that are leaders, access to ceremony, access to traditional ways, but it's how we're going about doing it that I think is where we need to take a better look. And so I always like to put that in there, you know, because in case anybody gets mad at me. but I have this group of elders who I love that I used to meet with during my dissertation, and then I've met with them all through the book. And I remember meeting with them one time, and I was just in a rough spot, and they're like, Karma, what is it you're trying to say? What is it you're trying not to say? And I said, I'm afraid to say it because you'll be mad at me. People are going to be mad. And this elder said, make us mad. Open our eyes up. Open our ears up. Make us mad. And oh my gosh, what a privilege it was to hear that. Because then I could be honest and say, we've got to do better. You know, this is not going away. And for me, the heartbreak of seeing, you know, my great nieces and nephews now in the system, it just breaks my heart. Many of them are already young parents. We've got to come against this thing. And I like to, Adam, how you pointed out that it has to be done at every level, you know, from the grassroots to the systematic, to the academic, to the professional, to the community, to the cultural. You know, let's face it, as Native Americans, our lives are not compartmentalized as we go through our day. This is an issue that you can't just put in one compartment, that it's, we've got to have people that are willing to deal with it on all the levels possible and in a good way, you know. And I'll use the example of, you know, what we're going through in this country when it comes to politics, the divisiveness, the, wow, you know, I've lived a long time and I've never been through something like this. And, you know, we've got to get people to be progressive and respectful and practice civility and all those things that democracy, which by the way came from, you know, the Iroquois, is all about in the best way possible. So, you know, it's just my goal to, you know, perhaps be a model of a different way of being and helping people as gently as I can to think about those people that are locked up all over this state and across our country, and think right. about what we could do.
Yeah, and then this big focus on women is huge, because I think this is something, again, that just on and on gets left out of, you know, what you're talking about. I mean, this whole invisible picture here and how women continue to get left out of the discussion, and people don't realize how those numbers are. And also to say that, not that the resources are all there, but it sounds like what you're saying is that we do have some of the tools, we have the knowledge base. I mean, we as a society, I guess, but then also with indigenous knowledge, you know, there's that whole area of expertise that our whole society should be looking at more. And like you said, even the roots of even the democracy itself, and what does that really mean? And these great organizations like Women's Justice Project and Red Lodge Transition Services here in Oregon. Any other quick resources just before we close up to mention?
Yes.
Quickly, if they're just looking things up or to plug in.
Certainly for those people who might be, you know, listening from Washington, there's two fabulous organizations in Washington State. One is HUY, H-U-Y, which is led by Gabe Galenda, an incredible Native American attorney, and they really serve people that are in. There's also a really good program run for the women in Washington State. And so there are resources available, and they're, you know, and I'm glad you brought that up, because if, you know, we're not all going to go volunteer in the prison, okay? I don't volunteer anymore just because I have three jobs and the book, and I don't drive on the freeway. Everybody knows why. I'm kind of a nut. I have an illness. But support these organizations in a way that you can. Call them up, email them. What do they need? And for those that can go in, let me tell you, they love seeing community, elders. They so appreciate anybody that gives their time to come in whether it's to be involved in a 12-step group, a cultural group. So, you know, if you have the time and are willing to go through the training, is not, you know, very hard to get in. So I just encourage people to, you know, think of ways that they can support and look for groups in your area that you might be able to lend a helping hand to.
Well, thanks so much. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. This is Prison Pipeline airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Big thanks to our guests and the Prison Pipeline Collective member Karen James for editing and production. Free them all.
Why do you love KBOO? Tell us what you most love about KBOO Community Radio, and we will use it on air during our next membership drive. Record a one-minute testimonial